but I left them on her windshield so she'd have to look at them all individually because I use gum.
You didn't tell me that part! Hi, welcome to Hate Podcast. We talk about the ghosts of the past and look at the spirit of the future. Hey, Jessica.
Are you using our intro as a coaster?
I am.
Room full of coasters.
Well, Jadio complains about me. I'm kidding. He was complaining about the mysterious clinking noise. Oh. It was me picking up my glass. But I was already sitting down with my headphones on. So for listeners, Jadio, that is our producer, whose name is not Jadio, that is his nickname. Was complaining about the clicking noises. We actually have my coaster is actually a sticky pad where our intro was written in pencil. Mm-hmm. And I read it every week.
Not anymore.
As of right now, no longer. I have outgrown the sticky note.
Just got to have it memorized now.
Just is no choice. No choice. I'm for Jadio's sanity. I must. Jessica, how are you?
You know, I'm making a comeback.
Mm-hmm.
I have mostly, mostly healed from injury one and, well, you witnessed injury two, so.
Yeah, the grill.
Yeah, took a grill to the foot.
Grill to the foot. I mean, we were setting it up. Mm-hmm.
You expect, though, styrofoam to be a little more reliable.
Do you?
Coming out of a box a little.
I do feel like it's famously crumbly.
No, I mean, like, when you're getting stuff out of the box. If it's either side, you expect that to, like,
stay.
Maintain itself.
Maybe.
And not just slide directly out all at one time.
See, this is where we differ, because that's exactly what I expect.
I have never had that experience of a styrofoam going so smooth. Usually mm-hmm. I have to fight the box.
I think what we're saying is you pulled the grill out of the box with greater force than was necessary.
That's true.
It was eager to be released.
Yeah.
And you were shocked by that. And the grill mm-hmm. fell on your foot.
It did.
And you are limping a little worse today than you were last week.
Yep. Well, I also didn't wrap my ankle all day, so.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You can't do that.
Well, meditate.
Oh. Well, Jessica.
God forbid you buy more.
I mean, you have to buy more tape. I mean, I would have stopped at a Walgreens for you.
Well,
for you, I would
I'm
have.
Only, to be honest, willing to pay Bezos prices, so it will be here tomorrow.
Okay, well, I understand that. Sometimes it'd be that way.
Yeah.
You know?
What was the value price for, like two rolls of the big rolls?
I have to say, I will say another thing about Jadio, and that is that he likes KT tape. And mm-hmm. so this is where he gets his as well.
Yeah.
But you know, you make regular people money. I'd make regular people choices.
Yep.
That's what we do.
That's what we're doing. Mm. We are talking today about someone very irregular.
Oh, we didn't even talk about a drink yet.
Oh.
We were talking about a drink because I made this drink. Sort of made this drink. Yeah. I halfway made this drink.
The ingredients were in a bag.
It is. Okay. Well, it's a gimlet, which I feel very fancy for making.
Okay.
Even though it's lime juice, sugar, water, simple syrup that I actually made in my own stove. And just some gin. But I had it at Adios one time that we went that you did not remember.
We go there a lot.
We do go there a lot. But I did expect you to remember this one drink. I think actually, no, it was a happy hour. I think that's why I had the
gimlet, like that
actually.
You ordered and consumed the drink and I was supposed to remember.
This is fair. But it had like, it was a fun little drink. It had like little foam and like a little
even the foam.
Lime zest. You know, I like a foam. Except that one time.
It turned me off from foam permanently.
Did not like the foam. I think you just gave Jessica nightmares about the foam. Foam with the whiskey drink. That was mm-hmm. my bad. But it is lime juice, simple, mm-hmm. and some gin. And I read like six different things online about the ratios. So we just sort of guessed. And I think it tastes okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is it my favorite drink? No. But does it work? Yes.
It's doing its job.
I mean, it's doing its job. And we will move on to margaritas later with almost the exact same recipe. Except it'll be tequila.
Is that the only difference, is the type of alcohol?
Well, I think I do. So this is like it was what, 2 ounces of gin to half an ounce of like lime juice and a half an ounce of simple.
Mm-hmm.
This is the recipe we did today. Mm-hmm. I feel like it could maybe be fiddled with. I don't know. My recipe of margarita is 2 parts margarita. No, 2 parts tequila.
Mm-hmm.
1 part lime. 1 part
I see.
Simple. But I will say it is that is a ratio that is heavy on tequila,
mm-hmm.
as a few people have discovered while drinking my margaritas.
Yes.
Just think about this. I do warn people. It's a heavy tequila mark.
I didn't get that warning.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Did I get you tipsy?
No.
Okay. You're fine. Maybe I knew you. I knew you. Is that a thing?
She's going to metabolize that shit so fast. I don't need to warn her.
Like, Jessica's fine. She's fine. That's good. We'll do that later. Mm. Yeah, it has like a... Mm. I'm going to ponder how to describe this gimlet.
I keep getting like a licorice.
Mm-hmm. And it's... See, I was going to say almost like a... like there's like a savory...
Yeah.
Edge to it. Mm-hmm. That's like... I don't say peppery, but like it just...
There's like a something there.
There's like a something. I'm mm-hmm. not sure what it is. Maybe this is why it was so good for that like tomato drink we had. Which I would like to have again.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be.
But it was like very... It has like a savoriness to mm-hmm. it. Where like a margarita might have like a smoother, sweet
yeah.
taste to it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Interesting. Well... That's me and my drink. Thank you for giving me your time today.
You're welcome.
I came with a drink recipe and I had to brag. What are we talking about today? I already forgot what you said.
Oh, well, I didn't get to it.
Oh, sorry.
We had to talk about your drink first.
I was like, well, excuse me. I bought 3 ingredients and I've made an entire beverage.
In a bag.
You must listen to me. It was in a bag. My favorite candle shop. I got it for free because I spent so much money on their candles.
This one comes out of me kind of being on a rewatch kick.
Is it The Seventh Heaven again?
Oh, no.
Frozen?
No.
Oh, my God. How much are you watching right now? What's happening?
Going, like,
You good.
I have my downstairs show.
You have your downstairs show and your upstairs show.
And my upstairs show. Mm. Downstairs, I am rewatching Boardwalk Empire. That was on HBO. I think there was a little overlap between Boardwalk Empire and...
Is this like a reality show?
Scripted. Okay. And The Sopranos.
Okay. Wasn't that like a mob show?
Yes. Wait.
Like The Godfather.
Yes.
Okay, carry on.
She knows 3 mob shows. Well. and then upstairs I'm watching The Real Housewives of Atlanta.
As one does.
Yeah. So in the rewatches, and then there's people online that like have been sharing their rewatch experiences.
Oh.
The Bridgerton people.
Oh.
The Downton Abbey people.
Yes.
Downton and then Abbey. There's my people, the Boardwalk Empire people.
Hmm. Okay. So we are 2 different people.
Well, Boardwalk Empire, I'm about to say this with the caveat that Boardwalk Empire was on in like 2004.
Oh, okay. 20 years ago.
Yeah. Where like some of these other shows are like female leads are becoming regular.
Mm-hmm. It's this become regular.
This was specific around who was real, Nucky Thompson. And he wasn't really... Mm. Not a lot of women involved in his neck of the woods.
I can see that. All right.
Whispers. Little baby whispers about who we're talking about today in Boardwalk Empire.
Oh, we're talking about Boardwalk Empire?
Kind of.
Oh, okay. Whispers.
Yeah.
Whispers of what?
Of our actual main character today. Oh. And there's been like a couple of like TV movies about her.
Oh.
Today we're talking Queen Shit.
Mm.
Highlighting the rise and fall of Stephanie St. Clair.
Oh, okay. Okay. I don't know this person at all.
I didn't figure.
Because I'm not a real story.
We just have to confirm who the Sopranos were. If you're not caught up on your mob lore.
I was like, is it because I'm not a real historian?
I'm like, no, you just don't watch enough TV.
Honestly, I'm so relieved to hear that.
Okay, so Stephanie St. Clair is born Christmas Eve, 1897, to a single mom. Felicienne.
Oh. Felicienne.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Okay, some people, we're already off to a derailment here.
Okay.
Some people say she was born in French Guadalupe. Other people say she's from Martinique.
Oh, so there's like a fight about where she was even born.
Yeah.
So right away. Conflict.
She maintains her own lore and just goes back and forth often.
Oh, you know what? She's like, nobody knows. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I'm from the Caribbean. What the fuck do you care?
Just.
She immigrates to the U.S. when she's 13 after her mother died.
Oh, no. By herself?
There was no other family.
Oh, she didn't have any siblings or anything?
Not that I could find.
Oh.
Now, the thing is, though, she probably passed through New York first to start life in Canada.
Oh.
Because of the 1910 to 1911 Caribbean domestic scheme.
What was that? I know nothing about this.
I'm really glad I'm not the only one that felt like, what do these words mean?
I don't know if that's comforting to you, Jessica.
Is it? All of the sources I read that. About this was like, why don't you know this?
Oh my God, is it like the time I was like, didn't I text you randomly about the Boston molasses flood?
Yeah, you're like, isn't that so funny? I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
You're like, what? I'm like, you're supposed to know this. You're an historian.
So everything. Okay, so.
So the domestic situation.
Yes, this is the 1910 and 1911 Caribbean domestic scheme.
Scheme, sorry. Wrong S word.
So apparently, Canada's like top hobby is labor schemes.
Hmm.
Because instead of proving conditions, you just hire people that will do the job at the condition currently.
Mm, that's sounding
familiar.
Yeah.
And to do, they wouldn't just hire Canadian people. They would. It's sounding like they're about to ship people from another part of the world to do the labor.
Mm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I need some labor. Wow.
Yeah.
You know what the Bible says? There's nothing new under the sun. And that one stupid.
It's an interesting like juxtaposition of like all these people are fleeing the East for freedom in Canada, and then like roughly 50 years later, they're like. What if we imported our labor force?
What if we just brought a whole bunch of other people and made them do these jobs?
So at first, it's British women that are getting flued out.
Okay.
To do this domestic work because they were, quote, suitable for marriage and children.
Okay.
They are white women.
Yeah. It's therefore suitable for
marriage. And then there weren't enough British women. So they're having this, like, Croatoa Roanoke crisis. So they're not paying enough women.
They need more women.
Yeah.
But like, where are the women?
Instead of employing other Canadian women,
okay.
They look elsewhere.
To the Caribbean.
They start recruiting.
Oh.
Out there.
What? Who decides this? It's like a government person?
Yeah.
Just the government?
The government. So when they, quote, ran out of suitable white women, the government moved into what is known as the West Indian Domestic Scheme in 1911.
Okay.
So they got a bunch of... They got specifically 100 women were recruited from French Guadeloupe to work in Quebec.
Oh, okay.
Including probably 13-year-old Stephanie St. Clair.
What?
Because where else is she going to go? And she's got to survive.
What? Yeah. So that feels a little...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Now.
Exploitive.
In 1912, they killed the program.
Oh.
Because people were like, these unsuitable... swine are physically and morally not equipped to be in our homes, and they ship them all back.
What?
Except for Stephanie.
Oh, so Stephanie stays.
She goes to New York.
Mm, smart.
The following year.
I don't know. Maybe it was.
It's a good move.
Okay, good
move. Maybe not at 14. You have to move to the big city, but.
Yeah, I'm concerned about Stephanie at this point.
There's a recession in 1913, so the Canadian government deports all the Caribbean people back for fear, quote, that they would become dependent on government assistance.
Okay. So they just brought these. Okay.
Yeah. And
so
then
just, what?
These same people banned them from coming back until 1955, where they just picked up the scheme again. Happens in cycles, like regularly.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay. So they brought them here for labor.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, oops, never mind.
Yeah.
Sent them all back.
Uh huh.
And they said,
no, don't come back.
You can't come back ever. You're banned from this country.
Mm-hmm, until 1955, and then they did another scheme for like a decade.
Okay. Having learned the lessons from the first scheme.
Correct. So when she officially lands in New York, she immediately goes to Harlem, which is like right about this time, like right before the Great Migration starts.
Mm-hmm.
She moved.
You want to explain to our listeners what the Great Migration is?
Great Migration is one of the largest, I would call it a labor movement.
Because mm-hmm.
people are moving from the South, the Deep South, up North for job opportunities.
Yeah.
The hub of, maybe not the only hub, but the Great Migration, I would consider to be a labor movement.
Mm-hmm.
Since so many people are moving from the Deep South to the North and along the way
mm-hmm.
for job opportunities. Somebody in Mississippi one time, it was like, the boll weevils.
The boll weevils. Oh, yeah, it was their fault. Yeah.
They were like, we're going to send these people up north.
It wasn't like racial terror.
It was the boll weevils. Did, like, kill a lot of crops. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, the boll
weevils were crisis. Bad.
I do believe there might be, like, a statue to the boll weevil in Mississippi.
Well, there's one in, was it Enterprise?
I have no idea.
Outside, it's Ronald McDonald, but he's a boll weevil.
Is that what I'm talking about?
Yeah. So as people are moving up into New York, they settle in Harlem because it's already growing to be a predominantly black neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Has not always been that way. but by then, seasoned. Some people are landing in Chicago. Some people land in New York. Mm-hmm. A lot of people go west. West is also a popular option. I don't think it's talked about enough.
Yeah, because I read a book recently that, like, talks about some great migration. Like, the characters in the book were a part of the Great Migration that went to California. Mm-hmm. And talked about, like, the political landscape there. And
yeah.
Anyway, don't want to derail. But I wanted to make sure we knew.
Yeah.
We described the Great Migration. Mm-hmm. And what happened with the Great Migration, Stephanie? Oh, everybody, the Great Migration was happening.
Yeah. She ends up in Harlem just before.
Because Harlem, the huge wave explodes. Yeah. Like a...
So Stephanie St. Clair is coming into Harlem right before the Great Migration. Mm-hmm. She lands in Harlem at an apartment at 409 Edgecombe Avenue, which really just sounds like a street address.
Yeah, it kind of does. I was actually wondering why you included that particular detail.
Specifically.
Are you so detailed because you're a real story?
Maybe, but also it becomes when the Harlem Renaissance kicks off. That's where, like, Du Bois and Thurgood Marshall and Aaron Douglas and Langston Hughes, like, all these people are staying there.
Okay. So she actually ends up at the center of things.
Yeah.
Some, like, big things. Okay, mm-hmm. Cool.
She, at this point, really leans into being, quote, French European.
Okay. Oh, bless.
Yeah.
Well, she's 14.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You well, maybe like 16 by now.
But you gotta, you know, you play with your identity some as a teenager. You kinda...
She could, the thing is, she could pass and she knew it.
Yeah.
She also, because she grew up on one Caribbean island or the other, depending on who you ask, she knows two languages.
Oh, okay.
Because it's still French occupied.
Yeah.
And she's got a full education. Mm-hmm. So everybody's like, who's this well-educated bilingual woman in Harlem? She was like, I'm from France.
She's like, can't you tell by my French? Huh? Oh, bless.
No one can really figure out where she's from or what her background is because she just, if somebody's like, oh, are you from? And she's like, yeah, totally. Are you? Yeah, absolutely I am.
You know, sounds like such a teenager. The vibe. Mm-hmm.
Now, pretty quickly after she gets there, because you gotta survive.
Yeah, gotta live.
She joins the 40 Thieves gang.
Oh.
And then she falls in love with a guy named Duke.
Uh-oh.
And Duke is a...
Do we think this is a mistake?
A Winnie Hutt Jr. gangster.
I see a mistake. Duke a mistake.
Also the rival gang. And so he tries...
Oh my God, it's Romeo and Juliet. He tries a story.
Kind of.
What?
She tries to... he tries to pimp her out. And she's like, well, we're not going to do.
Not going to do that.
Is this. And he ends up getting shot in a gang fight. And that's where she decides to end the relationship.
It does sound like that was an unhealthy choice.
Uh-huh. She immediately moves on to a guy named Ed and starts selling drugs.
Okay.
But he's in the same gang.
So he is Duke's?
Yes.
Side, originally?
No. They're both 40 Thieves.
Oh, okay. So he's in the 40 Thieves gang with her. This is feeling like the Aladdin.
Yeah. Now, she's
sequel.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying it's happening. She's so good at drugs. She makes $30,000 in 3 months.
Well,
at the
that'd be good
start
money.
Of the roaring 20s.
Yeah, that'd be good money today. Yeah.
And
to
then
be
she, they get into like a domestic thing.
Her and
there's
Ed.
In a pattern.
Yeah.
And he tries to strangle her. She fought him off so hard. And he, oopsie daisies, he fell and he hit his head and he just did never get back up.
Oh, so she maybe accidentally, but maybe on purpose.
Broke up with him. Mm-hmm. In a permanent way.
Maybe we call that a bad breakup.
Yeah.
Some people call that a bad breakup.
Yeah. But she takes everything she's learned from these two guys so far and she starts her own drug ring.
Okay.
She's got like a handful of employees.
So how old is she at this point?
Well, she's probably her early 20s.
Okay. So
she's doing well. Yeah. She is selling her drugs. She's employing folks to sell the drugs. She's paying off cops. She's living the mob life.
As one does. This sounds like this is very Gotham City.
Mm-hmm. On April 12th, 1917.
Okay.
Which is approximately 6 days after the start of World War I.
No.
She just drops $10,000 on the lottery and wins.
Did she have like insider knowledge? Or was it, do you think it was totally luck?
I think both.
Mm, a mixture.
Yeah. And from then on, she becomes a policy banker.
What is that?
Okay. I'm not saying it's right. Okay. I'm saying it happened.
Is that what
Let me be so clear. Everything in the story is illegal. don't do this.
We're actually not giving you a blueprint on how to start a criminal enterprise. No. This is just a story of someone who did.
Yes. To survive.
Yes. To be clear.
Yeah.
Sometimes people are left with very little choices because Canada does fucked up things.
Uh-huh. I mean, the Caribbean wasn't like a lot better, but
in the Caribbean,
when you have to like leave an island because your only family member died, it's a whole thing.
That's right. Traumatic, some might say. Yeah. As a teenager.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah.
We went out.
She's doing
that's a
her
roundabout
best.
Way of saying she's doing her best, uh-huh. maybe. At one point was doing her best, and then later mm-hmm. was really doing her best.
Yeah.
Being her best.
She's really good at this.
I'm actually digging a deeper hole into her situation.
Okay. Policy
she's
banking.
She's so good at legal stuff.
Yeah. She is a lottery winning policy banker now.
How much did she win?
I don't know. I couldn't find an exact like how much she won, but it was enough for her to like
policy bank
change careers.
Make a career switch, which as we know is very hard.
In my mind, when I explain this to you.
Okay.
At the same time, I can't. The timelines probably don't add up. I'm not going to fact check it. This is happening at the same time that Malcolm X is Detroit Red moving to New York.
Okay.
Also doing this thing.
In my
New York.
These are the same universes happening.
He's working for Stephanie St. Clair. Can't prove it. Not going to. Okay. The lore.
Which is what you believe.
Yes.
I'm a supporter.
Okay. Policy banking is a mix of investments, gambling, and like hoping to hell the lottery slaps.
Okay.
Numbers rackets are really popular in BIPOC communities for a number of reasons.
Okay.
Policy banking is originally a bolito in Spanish communities.
Uh-huh.
Same thing.
Oh.
Different name. It's one of the fewest ways that BIPOC people could invest their money.
Mm.
I use that term just so loosely.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a racket. This is racketeering. This is what this is.
Okay.
Most of the policy bankers are black.
Mm-hmm.
Participants didn't have to deal with like traditional banks, white racism.
Mm-hmm.
They had somewhere kind of safe to put their money.
Yeah. I'm going to be clear that some of this is happening because traditional banks are, there's a huge barrier.
Yeah.
To people of color.
Now, in this community,
accessing.
There are approximately 3 women that are policy bankers.
Mm.
They're rest are men.
Well, I mean, she's just breaking that glass mm-hmm. ceiling.
Yeah. She's like, I'm going to dominate this field. Nobody asked me to.
She's like, you know what? I'm going to be the best goddamn
I'm woman. I'm going to be the best criminal that ever lived.
Better than all women. Better than all men.
Uh-huh. Numbers running, because nobody's out there like, I need to find my policy banker.
That's fair.
Is really popular largely in urban areas for the above reasons.
Mm, okay. What is numbers running?
Policy banking.
Okay.
Same thing.
Okay. Thank you. A rose by any other name.
Yes. The game gets played a little different depending on where you are.
Okay.
Stephanie followed the traditional route of scamming people out of money.
Oh, no. Stephanie.
Uh-huh. Okay. I had to use a number of sources to figure out how the hell this works. So I'm going to do my best to explain this to you.
Okay, because I actually don't understand it at all. I'm baffled.
I think it's going to make sense once I put some numbers in it.
It's like space, you know? It's too deep.
I guess it's like space.
It's too big.
Okay. Stephanie's way, the popular way. Folks that are playing her numbers racket will pick a number between 1 and 999.
I really thought you were going to say big number 2 and 1 and 10.
Any combination of numbers.
Okay.
Now, policy bankers, numbers runners,
mm-hmm.
would generate the winning figure based on the total clearances in the New York Clearinghouse and the Federal Reserve.
Okay.
The daily number combined the second and third digits from the clearinghouse
mm-hmm.
and the third digit from the Federal Reserve.
Okay.
So, an example. Thank God for the internet. Somebody illegally ran numbers once and they were like, I'm going to write a blog.
Let me describe how this works.
Okay. If the New York Clearinghouse, because every, this is such 20th century bullshit. Every day someone was employed to write the New York Clearinghouse numbers on a chalkboard.
Okay.
So they were just publicly available on the street.
Okay.
For reasons. I'm maybe not wealthy enough to understand. Okay, so if the New York Clearinghouse was $589 million and the Federal Reserve was $116 million, they would take the first two numbers, so it would be, no, the second and third number. So it would be 8 and 9.
Okay.
And then the 6.
Okay.
So the winning number for the day is 896. It's a 600-to-1 odds.
So most people are losing their money.
Yeah. Now, a high bid is a nickel. So they're not spending like a ton of money.
But, you know, if a nickel every day.
Yeah.
Adds up.
It adds up. When you're probably making approximately 2 nickels.
Oh, damn. So they're doing the numbers game, but, like, the way that whoever wins is kind of out of control of the numbers house.
Right.
The policy bank, so to speak. Okay.
Now, on top of your bet.
So it can be rigged.
Yeah.
Oh, it can be rigged?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind.
On top of your bet, you also have to pay your betting fee.
Just pay a betting fee on top of your bet?
Yeah.
I've never gambled. Is this typical?
I don't know.
Okay.
You've but never we're gambled. we're in 1917. It doesn't matter.
Okay. So then you have to pay a betting fee.
Yeah.
Which is, oh.
And then if you lost, you're out approximately your 2 nickels.
Yeah. Oh. I can see that's a problem.
Yeah.
For people.
So Stephanie's always getting the betting fee.
She gets all betting fees.
100%.
And then also everybody's money except the winner.
Who maybe won. Because you have to pick up between 1 and 999.
So you have to pick that very specific number. So some days there are no winners.
Yeah. Many days there are no winners. And she's making bank.
Well,
off of this now, just,
why would people do this?
Is this desperation to make a little bit? They're hoping like hit just a little bit.
Okay.
To like maybe like buy a new couch or like.
You're right. I get it. You know.
Now, after the 1930s, though, the rules change. After the 1930s, because there's a depression. Your bet could count on any combination of the numbers you choose.
So you get 236. It could be 362. Mm-hmm. Or like, okay. Mm-hmm. To keep people feeling like they can put their nickels in.
Yeah. Now, this is illegal.
So illegal. Don't do this, folks.
But she does something that I think is kind of similar to like Nelly and Natchez, where she's taking her status and her money and feeding it back into the community.
Okay. The community she took it from?
Yeah. It's community. It's taxes. Like when you pave a road. It's like, I've already paid for this road. This beautification project was paid by the taxpayers. Just happens to be your betting tax.
What's he doing?
But she
what
also...
What's she doing for her community?
Gwyneth, this is so illegal.
So...
However, she has illegal. A staff of about 50 people.
Wow.
So they're making money.
Yeah, she's creating jobs.
For better or worse.
Yes.
Some of these people are numbers runners, or they're like clerks or messengers or secretaries or... handful of other things. She also uses this money to buy a handful of apartment buildings. So then she's got rent coming in, which is a legitimate business.
Yeah, she's diversifying her income.
Yeah, but all the numbers runners do this because you have to have a front for your money coming in because you have to pay the government your taxes.
Okay.
So she's giving people jobs and somewhere to live to cover up her illegal crimes.
Well, I mean, she's an entrepreneur.
It's enough for billionaires is all I'm saying.
You know, sometimes we talk about we have uncomfortable figures in history.
She's almost entirely anonymous, but people do know her name. Mm-hmm. Like the people that are betting get to know the on the ground runners more than the person running the circuit.
So she's like the woman in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
She's like the Great Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. And the curtain is Harlem.
And her apartment building.
She makes about $500,000.
A year?
Ish.
Whoa.
Yeah. And people start to call her Queenie.
Well.
But there are some things that we know about her. For example, petty. So petty.
Okay. I support immediately.
I have an upcoming story. I think the person we'll talk about next is maybe the only person that could match her in the show that I'm about to talk about.
I'm ready, ready, ready. I love.
Okay.
I love petty.
If she wasn't on 10 with her raging temper at somebody.
Oh.
Or swearing at her rivals just in the streets.
Just in the streets.
She would just write absolutely scathing newspaper columns about them. to put that shit on blast.
She just like, not published.
Yep.
She was like,
she was like, fuck this guy, and here's all the reasons. And it would just be in the paper.
So funny.
Mm-hmm.
That's really petty.
Yeah. Now, at the same time, like, the people in the community knew they could come to her if they were, like, really down and out and they truly needed help.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like, no questions asked. She didn't have to repay her. She was like, here, take what you need. Mm-hmm. And then when you're able to do it for somebody else.
Yeah.
Nobody is safe from these headlines, though.
Okay, what happened?
The police come for her and she comes for them.
What does she do?
Okay. She's bribing the police a lot.
Yeah.
Because of the schemes.
The schemings and the machinations.
Uh-huh. Yeah. She pays them regularly just to keep them out of black neighborhoods. Well, she's like, we're not doing this police brutality bullshit around here.
Yeah. That's a benefit. Yeah. That's a community benefit.
Mm-hmm. She also employs Ellsworth Bumpy Johnson.
That's not a real name.
It's his real name. His government name.
Ellsworth.
Uh-huh. He is one of the very few black men that work for white mobs.
Okay.
Elmsworth. He goes by Bumpy. Bumpy. He's a very dapper man.
Well, you have to be.
With a name like Bumpy.
Well, I mean, also, I think it's his birthright, given his birth name was Elmsworth.
Well, there's that.
Like, he came out of the womb wearing a tux.
But their relationship, because I think she kind of had a little thing for Bumpy.
She had a little for like, Bumpy.
He can stay around.
Okay, Elmsworth.
Flirt a little, wink a little.
I bet she called him Elmsworth in bed.
But it's...
Can you imagine?
Yes, I fear. But this is putting the other mafia on notice.
Mm.
Bumpy's working with us, but he's also out here with Stephanie.
Mm.
In a borough we can't claim yet.
That's what happens.
Yep. Now, at this, when she wasn't blasting the hell out of her enemies in the newspaper,
as one does,
she would then take to the newspaper to explain people's rights to them if they get arrested.
Mm.
People don't like that.
Yeah.
When you explain their rights to them.
Yeah. You know what? Who hates that? I always hated that.
Mm-hmm.
The police.
Now, the police would come to the Harlem in the neighborhoods, do their typical police bullshit. When they didn't back down from it after she warned them, she just run ads against the guy in charge.
She's like, what if I publicly shame you?
Eventually, they're like, we're sick of your shit. And they get her on trumped up charges, and she spends 8 months in a workhouse.
Okay.
However,
I do feel like that. I just feel like this is taking the pathway of that backfiring on them.
Well, immediately. Let me tell you why. Petty Queen. She goes to the Seabury Commission, who's like the umbrella of like cop investigation to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to.
Like internal affairs or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
And tells them that all the cops that are taking her bribes and gets them all fired. She takes down 13 guys by snitching on herself. She does her 8 months. Back in the streets.
She's like, you know what? This is going to take a little break for 8 months.
Yep.
And just let my revenge warm me at night.
Yeah.
That's so
now, funny. By then, Prohibition is, we're elbow deep in it.
Yeah.
Unless you're in Mississippi.
Really,
which
iconic.
Is nothing changed. In fact, got worse. So the numbers game isn't like really on the radar of the mafia yet, mm-hmm. because they're making buku money and alcohol.
Yeah.
When Prohibition ends, the crime families are not making buku money with alcohol anymore.
Yeah, because it's available now.
So they're like, what's our next? And so they try to get into the numbers game in Harlem.
Mm, but the numbers game being run in Harlem already, Jessica.
Uh-huh.
It's like, it's a turf.
Yep. It immediately becomes a turf thing. So.
Oh, okay. Wow, so she didn't even mean it that way. Well, I guess I did, but I was making a joke. But it was for real?
Yeah. So the first guy to try to, I don't know, dick swing around Harlem is a white guy named Dutch Schultz.
Dutch Schultz.
Yeah.
Not Schultz.
So he'd come in and he'd threaten the numbers runners and be like, if you don't give me a protection, then I'll just shoot you dead in the streets.
Oh, my God. And aggressive.
Stephanie and Bumpy are like, the hell you will.
Bumpy?
100%.
They're bumping.
And so they're not going to, we're not paying a projection because you decided to show up in Harlem. Mm-hmm. Take your Dutch shield bullshit back up the borough. Mm-hmm. Stay out of here. So he didn't do it. So he like killed a handful of her runners. And then she would go to his front businesses and destroy them.
With a hammer?
Like physically destroy them.
Oh my God.
And he'd like assault or kill a couple more. And she would just make absolute sure that nobody could come into that business because she would terrorize all the white people until they wouldn't come back.
So it's just going at it.
This goes back and forth for like a couple of years.
Oh my God.
And then two important things happen.
Okay.
She tips off the cops.
Again?
He ends up getting raided and they take $12 million from him.
That's so many millions of dollars.
So he tries to clap back at her. But before he can put his little scheme in place, he gets shot by a rival mob.
Did she tip the rival mob?
No, I don't think so. They had like some ongoing like...
So there was other things going on.
Nonsense.
Fortuitous moment. Yes. He's killed dead.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's shot.
Oh, he's shot alive. Yeah.
No, I will never measure up to this. He gets shot while he's eating at the Palace Chop House in Newark, New Jersey. She's in Harlem.
Okay.
She sends him a telegram on his deathbed that says, quote, "As ye sow, so shall you reap, Madam Queen of Policy." And then he dies.
And then he dies.
And then she was like, "I'm good," and hands off the whole racket game to Bumpy.
She's like, Bumpy. She's like, "You can have this, Pumpy."
Yep.
She's like, "I just had to win this last battle." Mm-hmm. She could simply couldn't. She's like, "What I cannot do is be at peace."
I will get my last lick in.
Until Schultz is out. Oh my God, it's so funny. I'm crying.
So in 1936, things really were about to take a dive.
Oh, no.
I'm about to introduce you to somebody you're going to hate.
Oh, no.
She enters a contract relationship.
Oh. Like Grey's Anatomy, like 50 Shades of Grey?
No, it's more like we'll date for a while. And if we're still into it, we'll just get married.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And there's a contract that's signed?
Yeah.
Okay. Very formal.
Mm-hmm. With.
Oh.
This is about to send me over the edge already, and I already know what happens in the story. She enters a contract agreement with a man named Bishop Amiru al-Mu'minin Sufi Abdul Hamid.
I'm sorry. What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ken, what happened to Bumpy?
He's running the racket.
But they're not still bumping?
No.
I wanted him to be her great love.
Well.
Because his name is Elmore Swartz.
Now we have Bishop Amiru al-Mu'minin Sufi Abdul Hamid.
Is that his birth certificate name? Because that sounds, I mean, I don't want to hate on Abdul. It just does sound a little like a name someone would give
What I
themselves.
Know about this man is he is the Hotepiest of Hoteps, and he would slide in the DMs and be like Grand Rising's queen.
Mm.
He claims to quote, be born in the shadows of the Egyptian pyramids.
Okay, this is for sure not a birth certificate name.
As it turns out, he's just some guy named Eugene, and he grew up in Massachusetts.
Did I not call it immediately? I was like, this is no way. This is a man who gave himself a name.
Let me the Harlem newspapers. Did you want to? Okay. I'm just going to suffer through that.
My eyes are watering so bad.
Are you just going to survive that?
I'm good. I'm going to weep.
Okay. The Harlem newspapers have a different name for Eugene.
Oh, what's their name for him?
Black Hitler.
What the fuck? Already?
Mm-hmm. Let me explain this man to you.
It was just barely going. The mm-hmm. Great War has not mm-hmm. arrived.
Eugene walks around in arguably the funniest thing I'm ever going to say to you. Quote, a turban wrapped around his head, a black and crimson lined cape, a velvet green blouse, and black riding boots.
A velvet green blouse? Does he ride?
No. We're in Harlem.
He's just wearing the boots.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Telling people he's born in the shadows of the Egyptian pyramids.
I do think that this man has a personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't diagnose people, but I am.
Well, justified in this case, I think.
I mean, I do think that this is some
it's about to not get better.
But I do believe that Bumpy was her best and healthiest love. Mm-hmm. And I think that that ended in a sad and tragic way. And this is a questionable man.
Yeah. Okay. This is an example of a woman who has never been able to be by herself.
Mm-hmm. That feels right.
Now, he's a separatist.
Okay. You want to explain that, what that is?
He is a... In his version of separatism, mm-hmm. segregation is good.
Yes.
Okay. At its most extreme. He's a... Just ship us back to Africa. Mm-hmm. Not in the Marcus Garvey way, in the, like, we demand that you ship us back.
Yes.
Where you got us from.
Let us make a home.
Yes.
Carry on.
He's also... openly, wildly anti-Semitic.
Oh, well, then that maybe, I mean, guess maybe Black Hitler fits.
Immediately aligns himself with the Nazi Party.
Oh.
And frequently organizes incredibly violent attacks against Jewish business owners.
Oh, my God.
In the name of, like, you need to be buying black.
Oh, my God.
Also, he's the leader of an Islamic Buddhist cult.
Oh, God.
Okay. All while he's wearing
his
a green velvet blouse
and riding boots. Okay. I'm sorry. And she just, okay, this doesn't, I don't know. Is this doesn't feel like Stephanie's match. She doesn't.
No.
This doesn't feel like the man for her.
Maybe in like notoriety. Because everybody knows Black Hitler.
It's true.
For better or worse. Now, shockingly, their marriage falls apart in 1938.
Oh my God. What? What?
I know.
What?
Can you believe? She finds out that
Is this... Am I going to laugh at her breaking point and it wasn't, like, assaulting Jewish people?
She finds out that he's having an affair. Okay.
I'm sorry. That is very sad for people, women who have suffered affairs. I'm
correct.
Sorry.
Now.
But I do think maybe the attacking Jewish people in the street.
You would draw a line, you would think.
You would think that would have been a line.
Here's the thing. I don't really feel sorry for this woman, but also I kind of do. Stephanie calls this woman, quote, a conjure woman from Jamaica.
A conjure woman from Jamaica? In the newspapers?
Yeah. She has been described other ways as a fortune teller.
Oh.
And then in a fun third option, she's known to, quote, peddle mystical potions.
The peddle mystical potions. It says that.
And goes by the name Fu Futam.
This sounds like a woman that man, whose name I can only remember the Abdul part of it, Ahmed,
yeah.
Be with.
Her real name is Dorothy Matthews.
Eugene and Dorothy and do sound like they belong together. Mm-hmm. Petal mystical now, potions.
And maybe tells fortunes and is also maybe a conjure woman that may or may not be from Jamaica. He just found an alternate reality, Stephanie, is what happened.
let me find this other lady. He found magic, Stephanie.
Okay. January 19th, 1938. She finds out about the affair. He's like, I didn't do that.
Betty
you can
did.
Believe what you want.
Well, she's like, I do believe.
She shoots him.
Oh.
Missed him.
Oh.
Came so close to killing him, though, she nicked his front teeth with the bullets.
How'd she... Imagining she shot him across the face.
Yes. Probably from the side.
From the side.
And caught his buck-ass front teeth.
His buck front teeth.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he did deserve it. Maybe not as much for the affair. I don't know if he deserved it. But I do think if you're going to make call Black Hitler.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Also, why would you hook up with a guy named Black Hitler? Because you're peddling mystical potions.
Also, why would you hook up with a man who's actually named Eugene?
Who's walking around in a velvet green blouse,
riding boots,
and a cape.
Also, same question we posed to Stephanie. What you doing, girl?
What happened there?
What's are you good? Why'd you make that choice?
Right. Like, the stroke game couldn't have been that good.
I mean...
There's no way.
There's no way he was good enough in bed to make up for the rest of that.
No.
Absolutely not. Mm-mm. I do think Stephanie could have found herself probably basically anyone.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, I would imagine most men would be scared to say no.
Mm-hmm.
But also kind of excited, you know? Excited about how scared they were.
Yeah.
That's what I imagine men to be in the presence of Stephanie.
Yes. Now, she gets convicted of attempted murder.
Well, she did. Attempt murder.
And she's sentenced to 10 years at a state penitentiary.
Oh, wow.
Now, important to note here. Judge James C. Wallace fittingly concludes, quote, this woman has been living by her wits with all of her life.
Mm, fair. Mm. Yeah, that would be on her, if you put that on her tombstone. Yeah. Correct.
As she's walking out of the courtroom, she reportedly, quote, kissed her hand to freedom. Like, finally, she's like, finally, I can just take a deep breath.
I can take a rest in jail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
because who's going to fuck with her in prison? Nobody.
Nobody, no. She's like, let me go take a nap.
She serves her time. Eugene and Dorothy get married. And go to their Islamic Buddhist cult with her mystical potions.
They get married.
And his boots.
I'd be so appropriate tonight. I'm like, did he wear them in bed? Like, I'm just seeing, it's just like, these boots are me.
Now, when she gets released, she goes back to, like, true civil rights work.
Mm.
Without the cult and the Dorothy.
Yeah, maybe she's... So she's actually in prison through all of the World War. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So she just, like...
Gets out right before Korea.
She's like, woo.
Yep.
Oh, look at all this. Everything's different. I imagine her investments are just living on, making money.
Mm-hmm. Because Bumpy's been running the numbers game this whole time. And then when she gets out of prison, she goes to live with him.
I said he was her true love.
You know what he's done?
What?
He has also sold off the numbers racket to somebody else so that he could write poems.
He's been inspired by Langston. He says on the outside, I'm a hardened criminal.
Mm-hmm. I'm a dapper man out on the outside, and I've definitely killed a guy. But read my poems.
I want to write poetry, actually, and wait for my love.
I'm soft on the inside.
So cute. It's too cute, Jessica.
He dies in 1968.
Oh, devastating. I'm so sad about that.
She dies 18 months later.
Oh.
Nothing is written about her. It's not in the newspapers. Nobody, like, eulogizes her in any way. She just disappears.
She just faints. What happens to all of her money?
It just... Just out there.
Oh, just floating about, mm-hmm. enriching Harlem.
Bruh. To some degree, I think the numbers racket does get taken over by white mobs.
Well.
So.
You know, at some point, you gotta give up the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Her and Bumpy.
That's
the
story.
I knew they were meant to be together. Mm-hmm. I said that, didn't I?
You did.
You heard me say it.
A couple times.
I was like, this feels like.
Plot twist.
This feels like.
She married a cult leader, and then Bumpy was like, poems.
And then she was like, this was it the whole time.
Yeah.
What if she did that thing where, like, I don't know if some women do this, maybe only in rom-coms, but, like, you go for, like the crazy person, and you're like, oh, wait a minute. I had that other guy.
I fear that happens in real life.
I fear.
Often.
You gotta look back, and you're like, I want to marry the poet on the inside.
Eugene is, like, the epitome of, like, stop letting that man drive your car while you're at work.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Stop doing that.
And Bumpy is like,
what if I just ran your business, killed it, hired a me, mm-hmm. and then I just wrote poems?
Yeah.
And then married you.
At 409 Edgecombe Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With the bros.
Just all of
them. While the white mafia takes over the neighborhood below.
Mm-hmm. It's just, you know what? We fought our fight.
Yeah.
We fit it good.
Remember, you know? That time you almost killed a man and then somebody else shot him and then you wrote a telegram?
just can you imagine, like, the stories they were having over a whiskey at night? That's so funny. I actually don't often consider myself to be a petty person. And I think it's because I
don't think I can. Like, this is Kendrick Lamar level petty.
I don't even know how you managed to be that. No, never in a million years. Could I do that? Because I think I'm like too.
Well, number one, you can't sell a telegram.
No, you can't send a telegram. Email just doesn't hit the same.
It doesn't.
Text, not mm-mm. it. What if you need somebody to walk in with a piece of paper?
The equivalent, I think, would be like if she was in like the early 2000s, like she was an early 2000s girly pop,
mm-hmm.
and she was like that exact line, and then she like slammed her flip phone shut.
And like an extra cheer if you like threw it across the room.
Yeah, and then like her AOL Messenger away message was like a Kelly Clarkson lyric.
Okay, what is the pettiest thing you've ever done?
Are you sure?
I mean, it is up to you. What is the pettiest thing you would like to be released publicly?
Oh, no, thank you.
Okay. We'll set that for private later over our margarita. I actually cannot think of a single petty thing.
I can't. I'm actually willing to talk about it because fuck this guy. I was dating this guy who stole my identity one time.
Oh, yeah. I know the story.
Mm-hmm. Now, I had paid my dues on the bills. He just he opened a bunch of credit cards in my name after he stole my social security number. And then I sent them all to his mom.
Yes. Payback.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
But I left them on her windshield so she'd have to look at them all individually because I used gum.
You didn't tell me that part. He was your Eugene.
Mm-hmm. Arguably also my Dorothy.
Because like,
he was a snake oil salesman.
He's like, what if his mother, but like, what if it's just like, why don't you just look at this piece of shit you raised? Mm-hmm.
And also peel all of this gum off I put on your windshield at approximately 9 a.m. in July.
Good luck. I cannot think of, I mean, I think I'm wildly direct and upfront. I can't think of a single petty thing I've done. Mm-hmm. Besides have some snarky comebacks sometimes. But none of them are good enough. They're not good enough, Jessica. They can't be a part of the
conversation. Got a whole lifetime ahead of you, though.
I got time to do it. Mm-hmm. I've got time to do more.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Pull my petty out.
Yeah. This is the life and times of Stephanie St. Clair.
Oh, my God.
Queenie.
Honestly, I was so deeply invested in this. Like her and Bumpy.
Was it the running boots?
That was the boots. As soon as Eugene came out, I was like, what the fuck is this man? Where is Bumpy? Call back Elmsworth.
I will show them to you now, but I do have pictures to put on our socials at Haint Pod on the gram.
Well, she's so pretty. She had been so pretty.
You know, okay. Now, knowing what we know, I do not mean this as a dig, but she does very much remind me of Linnell. Of Linnell's boutique. The liquor store.
Oh, here in Birmingham?
Mm-hmm. She's got a vibe.
Yeah, Linnell has a vibe. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. This is Jessica's favorite package store.
The only one that matters, really.
Mm-hmm.
I learned today, you know, speaking of the gram, that Linnell was an Olympic torch runner.
What? How?
In like 1996? I don't know how. The caption did not go into her entire life story.
I needed more information from that, to be honest.
What I can tell you is that she was an Olympic torch runner in 1996.
I wonder how that happens. How do you get to be one of those? I mean, Snoop Dogg's one.
Fundamentally, I think you got to be able to run a little bit.
Okay.
And this, what year was it where they just shot the flaming torch at it?
Like Game of Thrones. I can't remember.
But I think you still have to run it to that spot. Anyway.
Yeah, you have to get that spot. I think, doesn't it like go around the world or something?
I don't know. But anyway. You know,
I saw that Naomi Osaka light it when it was in Japan, the Olympics in Japan. And she did not run up the stairs. It was very like ceremonial and serious.
Well, she's also maybe not a runner.
She's a tennis player. They do a lot of like
sports. Up the stairs?
I don't know. But what I'm saying is, I think you don't, maybe if you got to be like the final torchbearer. You could walk.
If you're the final girl in the horror movie of having to run this thing.
You could, like, just walk. In a serious manner. A vibe. Oh, I love that. What I need is a couple shot of Bumpy and Stephanie together. Do we have that?
I do. I will provide that for you. And Eugene.
Mm-hmm. I do want to see his boots and his... Mm-hmm. I would imagine that picture is not in color, though.
No. Well, but it will be obvious, the disparity.
I wanted to see the velvet green blacks.
And the boots.
And the boots. I really want to see the boots. Oh, that's all. I really want those.
All right. All you haintlets and hauntlets, if you like the story of Stephanie St. Clair, Queen of Harlem, rate us immediately 5 stars on your favorite listening platform. Yes. Follow us at Haint Pod on the gram. We will catch y'all next week. Bye.